The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Primary Phase.
The history of every major galactic civilization has passed through three distinct and recognizable phases, those of survival, inquiry, and sophistication, otherwise known as the how, why, and where phases. For instance, the first phase is characterized by the question, how can we eat? The second by the question, why do we eat? And the third by the question, where should we have lunch? The history of warfare is similarly subdivided. Though here the phases are retribution, anticipation, and diplomacy. Thus, retribution. I am going to kill you because you killed my brother. Anticipation. I'm going to kill you because I killed your brother. And diplomacy. I'm going to kill my brother and then kill you on the pretext that your brother did it. Meanwhile, the Earthman Arthur Dent, to whom all this can be of only academic interest, as his only brother was long ago nibbled to death by an Akapi, is about to be plunged into a real intergalactic war. This is largely because the spaceship that he and his companions have inadvertently stolen from the restaurant at the end of the universe has now returned itself on autopilot to its rightful time and place. Its rightful time is immediately prior to a massive invasion of an entire alien galaxy. And its rightful place is at the head of a fleet of 100,000 black battlecruisers. This is why.
You mean this ship we've stolen is the Admiral's flagship?
That's the way it's looking. Perhaps we should just ask them if they want it back. You know, if we were reasonably polite about
it. They might just let us off with being lightly killed.
Yeah, well, at least it's better than...
It isn't better than anything at all, is it?
No.
Hey, that visi screen is beginning to flicker.
Hey, it must be some guy wanting orders. Oh, fetid photon.
Well, now, just order him to go away. You'll just have to bluff it out, say.
I'll just have to bluff it out?
Yeah, now, sit down and do something.
Say something.
Anything.
And now, don't worry, we'll be right behind you, hiding.
Oh, this is your idea, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, sit down there and be a star.
Hey, when I'm a star, I'll hire a better ideas man.
Thank you, Matt Lawn, Underfleet Commander, reporting from Vice Flagship.
Oh, hi, Underfleet Commandant.
Good evening, Admiral.
Hi. What?
I trust you had a pleasant meal.
What? Oh, yeah. It was fine. Thanks.
Delighted to hear it, sir. We are now in battle readiness state. Amber, deployed to your rear in line astride, 7 minutes from target galaxy, and waiting your orders.
Great. Fine. Keep in touch on under First Commandant.
Thank you, sir. Oh, sir.
Yes?
I like your outfit, sir.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that is just too
weird. That's amazing, Zaphod. You did it.
Cool. Really cool, Zaphod. Actually pretending to be the Admiral.
Yeah, terrific. Now listen, you dumb space cookie. I wasn't pretending to be the Admiral. For some weird reason, he just assumed I was.
Well, perhaps you look like him or something.
Yeah, well, not if he looks anything like his second-in-command, Monkey Man.
Well, what did he look like?
What was he?
Well, he was a big leopard, okay?
You know, with the sunglasses, the in-flight casual space suit split to the navel, brown beach loafers, you know, the whole bit.
How could he think you were the Admiral?
Well, maybe leopards just have a lousy memory for faces.
Hilarious.
No, it must be simpler than that. There's obviously something wrong with the busy screen. I'll have a look at it.
You heard what the big cat said. He said he liked my outfit, so he must have seen me.
Ah, maybe you just didn't have any taste.
Huh? Hey, the screen's coming on again.
Zaphod, get back in that seat. Trillian.
It's too late. Get back, all of you.
Underfleet Commandant reporting.
Hello.
Battlestate Russet, 6 minutes from Tara Galaxy. Admiral.
Yes?
I really like the kid, even better than last time.
Oh, thanks.
Wowee, weirder and weirder.
Good God.
What is it, Trillian?
Did you see that? I thought you said he was a leopard.
He sounded different.
Did he look different?
Well, he wasn't so much a leopard, more a sort of...
What?
Well, you know, shoebox.
A shoebox?
Full of, well, size 9 chuckaboots.
A shoebox full of size 9 chuckaboots?
All right, chimp man, what do you think this is, dictation?
I just wondered how she knew they were size 9.
Trillian, are you seriously telling us you've been talking to a box of shoes?
Yes.
And he...
She.
It.
They.
Thought that you also were the Admiral.
Well, you heard it.
What are they, clinically thick?
I think they're very clever. They're trying to confuse us to death.
I don't think they're very clever. There's only one person as intelligent as me within 30 parsecs of here, and that's me.
Okay, Marvin. Is there anything that you can tell us?
Yes. I've got this terrible pain in all the diodes down my left side.
What was the name the second in command said? Hagunenon? Why don't we look it up in the book?
What book?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, that hack rag.
The Hagunenons of Acetatus 3 have the most impatient chromosomes of any life form in the galaxy. Whereas most races are content to evolve slowly and carefully over thousands of generations, discarding a prehensile toe here, nervously hazarding another nostril there, the Hagunenons would do for Charles Darwin what a squadron of Arcturan stunt apples would have done for Sir Isaac Newton. Their genetic structure, based on the quadruple serrated octohelix, is so chronically unstable that, far from passing their basic shape onto their children, they will quite frequently evolve several times over lunch. But they do this with such reckless abandon that if, sitting at table, they are unable to reach a coffee spoon, they are liable, without a moment's consideration, to mutate into something with far longer arms, but which is probably quite incapable of drinking the coffee. This, not unnaturally, produces a terrible sense of personal insecurity and a jealous resentment of all stable life forms, or filthy, rotten, stinking samelings, as they call them. They justify this by claiming that as they have personally experienced what it is like to be virtually everybody else they can think of, they are in a very good position to appreciate all their worst points. This appreciation is usually military in nature and is carried out with unmitigated savagery from the gunrooms of their horribly beweaponed chameleoid death flotilla. Experience has shown that the most effective way of dealing with any Hagunenon you may meet is to run away terribly fast.
Great.
Terrific.
Thanks a million, Zaphod.
Well, hey, don't look at me. I mean...
What do we do?
The book says run away.
How do we get the automatic pilot on our side? Box of chockies and some sweet talk? Any ideas, Marvin?
If I were you, I'd be very depressed.
Earthman?
I go along with Marvin.
Ford?
Well, I always find that the prospect of death contracts the mind wonderfully.
You know, I've just thought there is a chance.
What, a chance? As far as I can see, you might as well lower haystacks off the boat deck of the Lusitania.
No, no, think about it. The second in command assumed that the Admiral, Zaphod, and I were the same person, not because we looked similar, but because we looked completely different.
Hey, yes, right, I'm with you. If the second in command can be a shoebox, the Admiral can be anything. Well, a paraffin stove, a water bison, an anaconda.
Oh, terrific. I'll root around for the water bison. Trillian, you see if you can find the jar the Admiral keeps his anaconda in.
Look, can it, Zaphod? It could quite easily be something mundane. A screwdriver, that coil of wire, the chair itself.
Yeah, hey, you know, that's a really neat chair. Could have been made for me. It's got the two headrests, dig?
What, those two great furry things?
Yeah.
Oh, they look ridiculous.
Oh, it's very uncomfortable. I'd prefer something with far longer arms.
But which is probably quite incapable of drinking coffee.
Hey, what did you say, Earthman?
You say headrests, Zaphod. They look a lot like eyebrows to me.
That chair is scratching its leg.
It's just been asleep all this time.
Arthur, for God's sake, get back here quick.
Yes, stand up when you sit on the Admiral Primate.
It's moving. Look, it's starting to evolve.
Eat your heart out, Galapagos eyes.
G-Force, you know what that is?
Let me guess. Horrible. I'm a whore.
It's a carbon copy of the ravenous bug bladder beast of Tral, and I'm a Vogon's grandmother.
The ravenous bug bladder beast of Tral?
Oh, yes. It's perfectly safe. It's just us who are in trouble. If that's the Admiral and he still wants his copy, it ain't Sponge Fingers he's going to dunk in it. What do I do? Pick up this table by the ears?
Oh, God, the whole place is coming alive!
Yeah, and we're coming dead!
Miss Ashtray, just change your job and I've had a constant...
Just tell it, we'll let them know!
Get off me, you filthy sofa!
Oh, God, and I've all time furnishing with the ribbon!
Get in the escape capsule!
Arthur and I'll take this one. Zaphod, you and the others take the left-hand one.
Right!
Press the go start, Arthur.
Safe. Oh, before. Look. The other capsule's missing. The chute's empty. Someone else must have used that capsule. The others are trapped.
Well, it's too late, Arthur. We can't help them. This capsule won't turn back.
What happens if I press this button here?
Don't!
Fortunately for Ford Prefect and Arthur Dent, their capsule was fitted with the latest in instant space travel, the Penargilon Kangaroo Relocation Drive, by which a ship may be ejected suddenly through the fabric of the space-time continuum and come to rest far from its starting point. This is, however, an emergency device, and there is rarely time to plot where the ship will land. Meanwhile, this is what happened to Zaphod, Trillian, and Marvin.
He's got us. Oh, if ever I survive this, I'll get a job as Moby Dick's dentist.
Trillian, I'm trying to die with dignity.
I'm just trying to die.
No problem. Pardon me.
The army is overpowering.
And this is what happened to Arthur Dent and Ford Prefect.
Are we in normal space?
No. I think we've materialized inside another spaceship.
More problems.
Well, we'll see. Checks. Atmosphere's okay. Let's get out and have a look.
Ford?
Yeah?
What about the others?
Arthur, you'll have to learn it's a convention in all space-traveling species that if you have to ditch someone, you know, a friend, and there's nothing you can do, you just let it be. You don't talk about them, okay?
What, really?
And then we get blind drunk about them later.
I think there must be something terribly wrong with the universe, you know?
I think there must be something terribly wrong with this ship.
Yes, it looks like a mausoleum.
That's it. Yes, you're right. The place is full of sarcophagi as far as the eye can see. Wow.
What's so great about dead people?
Well, I don't know. Let's have a look. Here. There's a plaque on this one.
What does it say?
Golga Frincham, Ark Fleet, Ship B, Hold 7, Telephone Sanitizer, Second Class, and a serial number.
Telephone sanitizer? A dead telephone sanitizer?
Best kind.
Well, what's he doing here?
Not a lot.
No, but I mean, why? Good God. This one's a dead hairdresser.
And this one here is an advertising account executive.
Are these really coffins? They're terribly cold.
All right! Hold it right there!
Why isn't anyone ever pleased to see us?
Captain?
Oh, yes, number one?
I've just had a sort of, report thing from number two.
Oh, dear.
He was shouting something or other about having found some prisoner.
Oh, well, perhaps that'll keep him happy for a bit. He's always wanted something.
No.
Captain, sir.
Ah, hello, number two. Having a nice day?
I brought you the prisoners I located in Freeze Bay 7, sir.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Excuse me, not getting up, just having a quick bath. Well, gin and tonics all round, then. Look in the fridge, will you, number one?
Certainly.
Don't you want to interrogate the prisoners, sir?
Hello, dear one. Earth, should I want to do that?
To get information out of them, sir. They are my prisoners. Can't I just interrogate them a little bit?
Oh, all right, if you must. Ask them what they want to drink.
Oh, thank you, sir. Mm. All right, you scum, you vermin.
I say steady on, number two.
Oh, very good, sir.
Thank you.
What do you want to drink?
Well, the gin and tonic sounds very nice to me, Arthur.
What? Oh, yes.
With ice or without?
Oh, with, please.
Lemon!
Oh, yes, please. And do you have any of those little biscuits? You know, the cheesy ones.
I'm asking the question.
Number two.
Sir!
Push off, would you? There's a good chap. I'm trying to have a relaxing bath.
Sir, may I remind you that you have now been in that bath for over 3 years?
Yeah. Well, you need to relax a lot in a job like mine.
What on earth's going on?
Could I actually ask you what your job is, in fact?
Your drinks.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I couldn't help noticing, you know, the bodies.
Bodies?
All those dead telephone sanitizers and account executives, you know, in the hole.
They're not dead, good Lord, no. No, they're just frozen. They're going to be revived.
You really mean you've got a hole full of frozen hairdressers?
Oh, yes, millions of them. Hairdressers, tired TV producers, insurance salesmen, personnel officers.
Security guards.
Management consultants.
Yes, well, you name it and we've got it. We're going to colonize another planet.
What?
It's exciting, isn't it, eh?
What, with that lot?
Yeah. Oh, don't misunderstand me. We're just one of the ships in the Ark fleet. We're the B-Ark, you see. Sorry, could I just ask you to run a bit more hot water in for me? Thanks. Yes. Do help yourself with more drinks, will you?
Oh, thanks. What's a B-Ark?
What? Oh, well, what happened, you see, was our planet was doomed.
Doomed?
Oh, yes. So what everyone thought was, well, let's pack the whole population in some sort of giant spaceship, you see, and go and settle on another planet.
You mean a less doomed one?
Oh, precisely, yes. So it was decided to build three ships, three arcs in space. Anyway, where's the soap? Thank you. So the idea was that into the first ship, the A ship, would go all the brilliant leaders.
The scientists?
Yes, the great artists, you know, all the achievers. Mm. And then into the third ship, the C ship, would go all the people who did the actual work, who made things and did things. And then into the B ship...
That's us.
Yes, would go everyone else, the middlemen, you see. And so we were sent off first.
But what was wrong with your planet?
Well, it was doomed, as I said. Apparently it was going to crash into the sun. Or was it that the moon was going to crash into us?
No, I thought it was that the planet was more or less bound to be invaded by a gigantic swarm of 12-foot piranha bees.
What? No, that's not what I was told. Yes, commanding officer swore blind that the entire planet was in imminent danger of being eaten by an enormous mutant stargoat.
Oh, really?
He was just hoping that the ship he was going in would be ready in time.
But they made sure that they sent all you lot off first anyway.
Oh, yes. Well, everyone said, very nicely, I thought.
Oh, yes, absolutely charming.
That it was very important for morale to feel that they would be arriving on a planet where they could be sure of a good haircut and where the phones were clean.
Oh, yes, well, I can see that would be very important.
Mm. Can you?
Shushan. The other ships followed on after you, did they?
It's funny you should mention that.
Yes,
because,
isn't it? Yes.
Curiously enough, we haven't actually heard a peep out of them since we left 5 years ago.
No.
Well, they must be behind us somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, they were eaten by the goat.
Ah, yes. The goat.
Hmm.
It's a funny thing, you know. Now that I actually come to tell the story to someone else, I mean, does it strike you as odd, number one?
Well, sir,
see that you've got a lot of things you're going to want to talk about, so thanks for the drinks, and if you could sort of drop us off at the nearest convenient planet.
Well, that's a little difficult to see, because our trajectory thingy was preset before we left Golgafrincham.
Mm. When are you going to reach the planet you're meant to be colonizing?
Oh, well, we're nearly there, I think. Yes, any second now. Well, it's probably time I got out of the bath, in fact. I don't know, though. Why stop just when you're enjoying it, I always say.
So we're actually going to land in a minute?
Well, not so much land, in fact. I think, as far as I can remember, we're programmed to crash on it.
Crash?
Yes. It's all part of the plan, I think. There was a terribly good reason for it, which I can't quite remember at the moment.
You're a load of useless bloody loonies.
Ah, yes, that was it. That was the reason. Got it. Apart from the loonies. Oh!
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has this to say about the planet of Golgafrincham. It is a planet with an ancient and mysterious history, in which the most mysterious figures of all are, without doubt, those of the great circling poets of Arium. These circling poets used to live in remote mountain passes where they would lie in wait for small bands of unwary travellers, circle round them and throw rocks at them. And when the travellers cried out, saying, why didn't they go away and get on with writing some poems instead of pestering people with all this rock-throwing business, they would suddenly break off and sing them an incredibly long and beautiful song, in which they told of how there once went forth from the city of Vassilion a party of 5 sage princes with 4 horses. The first part of the song tells how these 5 sage princes, who are, of course, brave, noble, and wise, travel widely in distant lands, fight giant ogres, pursue exotic philosophies, take tea with weird gods, and rescue beautiful monsters from ravening princesses, before finally announcing that they have achieved enlightenment and that their wanderings are therefore accomplished. The second, and much longer part, tells of all their bickerings about which one of them is going to have to walk back. It was, of course, a descendant of these eccentric poets who invented these spurious tales of impending doom, which enabled the people of Golgafrincham to rid themselves of an entire useless third of their population. The other 2/3, of course, stayed at home and lived full, rich and happy lives until they were all suddenly wiped out by a virulent disease contracted from a dirty telephone. Meanwhile, Arthur Dent, Ford Prefect, and an arkload of frozen middle management men have crashed into the prehistoric dawn of a small blue-green planet circling an unregarded yellow sun at the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy. After a year or so, they convene a meeting to consider their position, which is not, on the whole, good.
I'd like
to call this meeting to some sort of order, if that is at all possible.
Careful, like, Prince, sir.
Not now, love.
Look, come on, please. I mean, everybody, there's some important news. We've made a discovery.
Is it on the agenda?
Oh, don't give me that.
Well, I'm sorry, but speaking as a fully trained management consultant, I must insist on the importance of observing the committee structure.
On a prehistoric planet?
Address the chair. Yes.
There isn't a chair. There's only a rock.
Well, call it a chair.
Why not call it a rock?
You obviously have no conception of modern business methods.
And you have no conception of where the hell you
are.
Oh,
look, shut up, you two. Just shut up. I want to table a motion.
Bolder a motion, you
thank,
mean.
Thank you. I think I've made that point. Now, listen.
Order.
Oh, God.
Listen, I would like to call to order the 573rd meeting of the Colonization Committee of the Planet of Tintlewoodle.
Oh, this is futile. 573 committee meetings, and you haven't even discovered fire yet.
If you would care to look at the agenda sheet.
Agenda rock.
Yes, oh, go on back home something, will you?
You will see that we are about to have a report from the Hairdresser's Fire Development Subcommittee today.
That's me.
Yeah, well, you know what they've done, don't you? You gave them a couple of sticks, and they've gone and developed them into a pair of bloody scissors.
When you have been in marketing as long as I have, you'll know that before any new product can be developed, it has to be properly researched.
Yes,
we've got to find out what people want from fire. I mean, how do they relate to it, the image?
Oh, stick it up your nose.
Yes, which is precisely the sort of thing we need to know. I mean, do people want fire that can be fitted nasally?
Yes, and the wheel. What about this wheel thingy? Sounds terribly interesting project to me.
Well, we're having a little difficulty here.
Difficulty? It's the single simplest machine in the entire universe.
Well, all right, Mr. Wise Guy. If you're so clever, you tell us what color it should be.
Oh, yes. Mighty Zircon, has no one done anything?
Finlon, the producer, has rescued a camera from the wreckage of the ship and is making a fascinating documentary on the indigenous cavemen of the area.
Oh, yes, and they're dying out. Have you noticed that?
Yes, we must make a note, sir, to stop selling them life insurance.
But don't you understand? Just since we've arrived, they've started dying out.
Well, yes, and this comes over terribly well in the film that he's making. I gather that he wants to make a documentary about you next, Captain.
Oh, really? I say that's
all. Oh, he's got a very strong angle on it. You know, the burden of responsibility, the loneliness of command.
Well, I wouldn't overstress that angle, you know. I mean, one's never alone with a rubber duck.
Skipper. Listen, if we could, for a moment, move on to the subject of fiscal policy.
Fiscal policy? Yes. How can you have money if none of you actually produce anything? It doesn't grow on trees,
Allow me to continue. Yes, since we decided a few weeks ago to adopt leaves as legal tender, we have, of course, all become immensely rich.
We have
also run into a small inflation problem on account of the high level of leaf availability, which means that, I gather, the current going rate has something like 3 major deciduous forests buying 1 ship's peanut.
Yes.
So, in order to obviate this problem and effectively revalue the leaf, we are about to embark on an extensive defoliation campaign and,
Burn down all the forests. I think that's a sensible move, don't you?
That makes Echinagan furious.
You're a bunch of raving nutters.
Well, is it? Yeah. Perhaps in order to inquire what you have been doing all this time, huh?
Yes.
Yes, you and that other interloper have been missing for months.
Well, with respect, love, we have been traveling around trying to find out something about this planet.
Well, that doesn't sound very productive. I mean, I thought...
No, well, I have got news. I have got news for you. It doesn't matter, a pair of fetid dingo's kidneys, what you all choose to do from now on. Burn down the forest, anything. It won't make a scrap of difference. 2 million years you've got, and that's it. At the end of that, your race will be dead, gone, and good riddance to you. Remember that. 2 million years.
Ah, it's time for another bath. Pass me the sponge, somebody, will you?
No, Q scores 10, you see, and it's on a triple word score, so... I'm sorry, but I explained the rules. No, no, look, please put down that jawbone. All right, we'll start again, and try to concentrate this time.
What are you doing, Art?
Trying to teach the caveman to play Scrabble. It's uphill work. The only word they know is grunt, and they can't spell it.
And would you please tell me what that is supposed to achieve?
We've got to encourage them to evolve, Ford. Can you imagine what a world is going to be like that descends from those cretins over there?
We don't have to imagine. Let's face it, we already know what it's like. We've seen it. There's no escape.
Did you tell them what we discovered?
Slarty Bartfast signature on the glacier? No. What's the point? Why should they listen? What's it to them that this place happens to be called the Earth?
And that it happens to be my original home?
Yeah, but... You won't even be born for nearly 2 million years, so they're likely to feel that it's not a lot of your business. I mean, face up to it, Arthur. Those Zeebs over there are your ancestors, not these cavemen. Put the Scrabble away, it won't save the human race, because Mr. Ugg here is not destined to be the human race. The human race is currently sitting round that rock over there, making documentaries about themselves.
But there must be something we can do.
No, nothing. Really, nothing. Because it's all been done. I mean, listen, we've been backwards and forwards through time and ended up here, 2 million years behind where we started. But that doesn't change the future, because we've seen it. I mean, wise up, kid. There's nothing you can do to change it, because it's already happened.
And all because we arrived here with the Golga Frinchams in their B-Ark.
Yes.
Poor bloody caveman. It's all been a bit of a waste of time for you, hasn't it? You've been out-evolved by a telephone sanitizer.
He's pointing to the Scrabble board.
Oh, he's probably spelled library with one R again, poor bastard.
No, he hasn't.
Hey, no, look. It says 42. The experiment. It's something to do with a computer program to find the ultimate question.
Hey, you know what this means, don't you?
What?
It must have gone wrong. If the computer matrix was set up to follow the evolution of the human race through from the cavemen, and then we've arrived and caused them to die out...
And actually replaced them...
Then the whole thing is cocked up.
So whatever it was that Marvin spotted in my brainwave patterns is in fact the wrong question.
Yeah! Well, it might be right, but it's probably wrong. Oh, if only we could find out what it is.
Look, if it's printed in my brainwave patterns, but I don't know how to reach it... Suppose we introduce some random element which can be shaped by that pattern.
Like?
Pulling out letters from a Scrabble bag.
Brilliant. That's bloody brilliant.
Right. First four letters.
W-H-A-T. What?
One more.
Yeah, D-O, do. It's working. This is terrific. It's really coming. You get... What do you get?
More here.
If you multiply... Oh, I'm beginning to get sinking feelings about this. If you multiply six by... By nine? Is that it?
That's it. 6 by 9, 42. I always said there was something fundamentally wrong about the universe. So what do we do now?
I guess we just swallow our pride and go and join the human race.
Yes.
Right.
It's sad, though. Just at the moment, it's a very beautiful planet.
It is. It is indeed. The rich primal greens, the river snaking off into the distance... The burning trees.
And in 2 million years, bang, it gets destroyed by the Vogons. What a life for a young planet to look forward to.
Well, better than some. I read of one planet off in the seventh dimension that got used as a ball in a game of intergalactic bar billiards. Got potted straight into a black hole, killed 10 billion people.
Total madness.
Yeah, only scored 30 points too.
Where did you read that?
A book.
Which book was that?
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, that thing.
Thank you. across the trees of green.
In the last episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones was the book. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent and Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect. Mark Wing Davy was Zaphod Beeblebrox, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, Stephen Moore, Marvin, Beth Porter, Marketing Girl, Jonathan Cecil, Number One and Management Consultant, David Jason, Captain and Caveman, and Aubrey Woods, Number Two and the Hairdresser. The program was written by Douglas Adams and John Lloyd and produced by Jeffrey Perkins, with the technical assistance of Alec Hale-Munro and Paul Horden, and Harry Parker and Dick Mills of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop.
What a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.